But now the Trump presidency is coming to an end. To an end. With so many squandered opportunities and ruined potential, but also an era of just plain meanness. It must be said, to paraphrase President Ford, for tens of millions of our fellow Americans, their long national nightmare is over.
Welcome to The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Sunday, November the 8th, 2020. On this edition of The Politocrat, a look again at Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and what the agenda is going to be for them, what the agenda is going to be for you, and how you can chart your own agenda and build an organization of people that becomes a movement that can resonate and put its organizational and agenda goals on the table for a Biden-Harris administration with the issues that matter the most to you. Plus, Donald Trump, the waning days of a failed and deadly 4 years. That coming up next. Yes, it is over. For now, at least. Certainly, this era of evil is over. And Donald Trump is just 73 days away from being booted out of the White House. Whether it is frog marched out, whether it is handcuffs, whether it is whatever it is, he is not going to be a part of your daily life in terms of whether it's on Twitter polluting the tweet waves, in a position of power at least, he won't be. Whether it is making policy or crafting executive orders that are designed to cripple the nation's spirit and the people's spirit, or anything else. On January the 20th, 2021, at 1 minute past midday Eastern Time in the U.S., Donald Trump will no longer be an occupant of the White House. He will no longer have the title that he's been given these last 4 years, a title that I have refused, as many else others have, to call him. Now we will see what happens between then and now. Now and then. But what we can say, and what I can say to you on this Sunday, is that Roy Orbison is correct. It is over. But in a very real sense, it is only just beginning. Part of the national nightmare is over. And although Jake Tapper, as you heard there, said that the national nightmare, paraphrasing, quoting President Gerald Ford after the exit of Richard Nixon in August of 1974, that our long national nightmare is finally over. Look, the fact of the matter is, only part of the national nightmare is over. Only part of it. Donald Trump represents the system. He is a symptom of the system, not the cause of it. He is toxic, as is the system, and the system has always worked the way it was designed to work. So with that recognition, and with that recognition that Joe Biden will take the reins at the White House as the president, as the 46th president of the United States, come January the 20th at just a minute past noon Eastern Time in the U.S. Now is the time to start looking at the kinds of things that Joe Biden is going to be doing, what he has signaled that he will do first, the kinds of things that he's campaigned on, which is what I will be talking about in even more depth at a later date. But just to go to bullet points on each of those, or at least the major ones that he kept repeating during his campaign, which is now finished. The campaign's over. The election's over. Yes, the counting is continuing for counting of votes. That has always happened in any election. No election's votes are ever all totally counted up. And if they are, they're not even certified until, I think, sometime either late in this month of November or by a certain date in December, which is exactly what's happening. Now, look, that's something you've got to look at in terms of the kinds of things that Biden is signaling now in his speech. I played the speech in yesterday's episode more so as a speech of an occasion rather than a speech for any further analysis. And I'm going to start to transition, if you will, over from celebrating what has happened here in the last 24 hours, and while I am still celebrating personally for both of them, because I do think, even with my differences with a lot of Joe Biden's record and my profound disagreement with some of his policies and my aversion to some of what he's done over the 48 years he's been in politics, I do think, and again, even though I will still stand by my belief in Tara Reid, I think the guy, and this is really kind of how can you be decent if you're accused of, or if you've done, you know, the really unholy things that Tara Reid has said that he had done to her or has done to her. But I think what's clear is that this campaign revealed, in case people didn't know, that Joe Biden is, particularly when compared to Donald Trump, is a fundamentally decent person. Now, I know what's happened, and again, people will take issue with what I've just said, and I think they're rightly so, because how can someone be decent who does something that he's been accused of doing? And I believe, again, in Tara Reid, and I spoke about this back in April of this year, I do think it's very important to put two things on the table here. One is that we have elected so many people who have done some really evil things. And two, because that is the truth, that does not mean that we should gloss over or look away from the things that they have done. I don't think we should, right? We've had people become president who have owned black people as property. We've had people become president who participated directly in the murder and the genocide of Native Americans in this country. We've had, you know, all manner of really evil, quite frankly, white men who have desecrated the country that they governed over in terms of desecrating black, brown, and native peoples. I mean, that is something that is very, very, very clear to me. And that's what history shows us. It's not just my opinion. But actually, let me add a third part to this piece here. And the third part is that we have to look at the good of the country and how the interests of the country are best served. So that even despite the evil fact that Joe Biden is accused of or may well have done, and I think he did, do what he has been accused of doing to one person, to one individual. We have to weigh that, I think. And we also have to weigh how about the way every other group is affected by having a Biden administration versus having a Trump administration in the White House. I mean, because, yes, it's important to look at what has happened to individuals who've made these accusations. Look at Clarence Thomas. Look at what's happened to Anita Hill. You know, Clarence Thomas is on the blooming Supreme Court and has been for nearly 30 years now. And I like the way I feel about Joe Biden vis-a-vis Tara Reid. I feel the same way about Clarence Thomas vis-a-vis Anita Hill. I think he definitely, in my view, did the kinds of things that Anita Hill accused him of. Just like I said, I feel that Joe Biden did the things, the evil thing, that Tara Reid accused him of. So, you know, again, I'm not trying to gloss over these things. Bill Clinton, right? This guy, look, his personal character, and there are pundits even alluding to this yesterday, and I'm not taking my cue from them, but since I am talking about these things, there are a lot of people who we, again, as I reinforce this, there are a lot of people we have voted for who aren't people of good character. And I guess that's what politics is, or that's what the system is that you have people running a system who don't have good character, who aren't meant to, quite frankly, because the system isn't about good character, quite frankly. That is not to say that these things should not be confronted and challenged and changed. I'm not saying that. I'm all for, believe me, I am all for completely dismantling a system that oppresses black and brown people, and a system that oppresses black women in particular, and any group, particularly a long history of oppression. So look, this is not something I'm talking about here or mumbling through to no effect. This is something that's extremely important. And, you know, I can say Bill Clinton, I can talk to you about George W. Bush, I can talk to you about when he governed, President Obama, some of the things he's done foreign policy-wise, some of the things he's done domestically, the deportations, which, you know, hardly ever gets talked about in the corporate news media. Surprise, surprise. And we can look at Flint and his role in that little mess, which is more than a little mess. I don't, at the risk of trivializing, you know, and there's a lot of things. So none of these people, and it's not a referendum on that, but it's a realization that while character does matter, and the American public on Saturday officially affirmed that character does matter, particularly in this election, it mattered because of the toxic orange destruction that we saw of this country and the infrastructure in it. We know that that matters. And so because that does matter, it is worthwhile calling into question all these things. And I've done this with Joe Biden. I have absolutely done that. I was a huge supporter of Bernie Sanders. I'm a progressive. I'm somebody who believes in forward thinking and progress for the country in a forward way. Progress particularly for black and brown and native peoples, particularly especially black people. I believe in progress for women of all races. I believe in progress of the people who are members of the LGBTQIA community. I believe, you know, I mean, the, you know, I believe in the access to all facilities for people who have disabilities. I believe in advocating for all those things. I believe in that we need to have a cleaner environment, or that we could try to slow down some of the things that are destroying the atmosphere. It's very difficult now because it's already been accelerated, but there are things that we can do daily in our lives and be aware and actually put these things into practice and implementation in our own lives. I mean, that's what progressives stand for, racial justice. I mean, there are some progressives who don't stand for racial justice. There are some progressives who will say something, and Bernie's one of them. You know, for a couple of seconds, he'll talk about race and he'll pivot to economics. And there are white progressives like that who I actually have differences with, because I don't think that they care much about black folk and brown folk. They care about their own power of in a movement that is supposed to be a movement about the people, not about their power and their personality and consolidation. And I'm not necessarily even alluding to or saying that Bernie Sanders is one of those people. He's had a 40-year record of fighting for people everywhere. So I'm not really saying that about him, but what I am saying is that this cannot be about personalities. This cannot be about one person. And even though these one persons that I have cited over the last 5 minutes have been toxic in very many ways on a private and personal level, none of them has destroyed the infrastructure of government. And they've destroyed a lot of lives. I mean, Bill Clinton's welfare bill absolutely destroyed a lot of lower income black families in this country. There's just no question around it. No way around it. So there have been people who have done more damage, arguably, in that way than even Trump has to a degree. We have to look at this openly and honestly. But there's no denying that Donald Trump has caused so much terror and panic in this country and destruction in this country and destroying the government apparatus in this country, not helping governors, and that means that has an effect on you. So that creates a lot of damage for lots of people, because if you live in a state, and we all live in a state here, if we're living in the United States, and your governor in your state's not getting the monies to fight this COVID-19 virus, not getting the monies to get better election infrastructure so that we don't have to wait 4 days for a result in Pennsylvania, and that count, I think, is still going on, by the way, so that we don't have to wait 4 or 5 days for a result, because the Republican legislature is telling the Democratic governor, no, you're going to wait to count this afterwards, not before. So this has got to be about more than one person. This has got to be about us as people. This next 73 days and, of course, into Biden's term in the White House has to be about what our agenda is going to be. It has to be about accountability. It has to be about making sure that Joe Biden does not let Donald Trump off the hook. It has to be about making sure that our voices are heard when and if Joe Biden decides to turn his back on the very people who got him into office. It has to be about more than symbolism. It has to be about more than, hey, we won. Right now, that is where we are, right? We are at the hey, we won stage of things. And that's good. I think it's healthy after the horrible year, the horrible calendar year that we have had. It is completely understandable to let off some steam, let the pressure valve be released, joy in the streets, commence au festival. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I'd join in those efforts if there wasn't this virus running all over the place. I really would. I'd be one of the first out there. Heck, when the San Francisco Giants won the World Series, you know, in those 3 years, in the even-numbered years earlier in this, you know, last few years, 2010, 2012, 2014, who was the quick? I mean, you wouldn't have seen anyone out there quicker than me with a bottle of champagne in the streets. I mean, listen, I am not one to be confined, you know, when there's momentous occasions going on. But this coronavirus has changed everything. And heck, I get out, I go out. It's you know, good, everything's great, that's fine. But, you know, I know people who have this virus. And maybe you know people too who do. Maybe you have had this virus. And your experience with it, if you've had it, or someone you know who has had it, is a very unpleasant one. Or it may not be quite as unpleasant, but it's inconvenient. So we are at this point where we are being affected by this virus. And, you know, people have a right to celebrate when the outcome that they were hoping for actually happens. Nobody cares about Donald Trump right now except Donald Trump and his inner circle and his family. And the people who are part of his death cult are gonna still be around, but they're just not going to be at least as vocal. And the only way they will stay vocal is on social media and is on Fox News or Newsmax or any of these other, you know, Trump TV outfits, state TV outfits of propaganda. And what you're going to end up seeing, I think, from Donald Trump, who refuses to concede, and I don't care, because him conceding or not conceding will change nothing when it comes to Joe Biden being sworn in on the 20th of January, 2021. It will change nothing in terms of the American people and the will of the people, because the will of the people now has been established. Yes, it's going to be officially confirmed sometime later this month or next, but the will of the people has been established here. Joe Biden is going to end up with something like 77 or 78 million votes. Donald Trump right now is probably going to be closer to 72, late 70s, 71, 72 million votes. So if my math serves me correctly, that's about a 6 million plus voting lead that Joe Biden would have. That's a pretty damn big lead. You know, that's more than, I believe, what Obama won within his first term. And he beat Romney, did Obama, in his second term pretty handily. So, which is, I think it was about 6 or 7 million votes. And anytime you have a 6 million vote plus advantage, that's a landslide in the popular vote. That would be the equivalent of a landslide. Now, it may not seem that way because of the way that these Republican state legislatures have staggered everything to make it seem like it's nail-biting, and then the media picks up that frame and then has its pundits reinforce that systemic frame. Oh, well, it was really close. Oh, and 50% may have voted for Biden, 50-plus, but my goodness me, 49-point-whatever voted for Donald Trump, and Biden has to listen to them. Does he? Does he have to listen to them? I mean, yeah, he does. I mean, he does. But Donald Trump didn't listen to the over 50% of people who voted for Hillary Clinton. He didn't listen to them. And I do not remember these pundits, Rick Santorum, who were out there saying, oh, Donald Trump must listen to the 51, 52, whatever percent of people, I think it was 50, or 49 or 48, who voted for Hillary Clinton. More people voted for Hillary Clinton than they did, both as a raw number and as a percentage, than did people vote for Donald Trump in 2016. And the only reason why Donald Trump was able to pollute the office for the 4 years that he has been in there and will soon be leaving, in handcuffs, in a straitjacket, in an orange jumpsuit, however, is because the Electoral College helped him. The Electoral College brought along, as it has for all of these decades now and centuries, you know, white minority rule. So that you've got this white man in there who most of the country did not vote for, and a minority of the country voted for, and he's instituting all these damaging things for everybody who didn't vote for him. I guess what I'm getting at here as I go on and on is in dealing with what we've got here, in dealing with the insurmountable, it's not insurmountable, but with the avalanche of hatred that we have to just deprogram and swim away from and elevate ourselves to a different level of humanity where we confront people and educate them, or we move forward and push forward with a program and an agenda that we must push forward on because it's very important. And I think that's really what I would get to is the agenda. Joe Biden has formally announced the website, it's been around already for about 2 weeks now, but the Biden-Harris transition website at buildbackbetter.com. Buildbackbetter.com. And I'm going to include that as a link in this episode's liner notes, and you can see that link best if you go to Apple Podcasts. Some of the podcasting networks and systems that this podcast is on kind of they jumble up all of the wording for the episode, and so all the links get jumbled in together, and you know, there aren't any hyperlinks that you can really actually click on. You have to copy and paste it. So I think, and there are some that aren't like that, but definitely one that is not like that is the Apple Podcast Network. So if you're on Apple Podcasts, if you listen to me on Apple Podcasts, this podcast episode on Apple Podcasts, be sure to click on the links. that are in the liner notes, because they're very important. There's information in there that you may not have seen elsewhere. You may not have had a chance to catch up with things. And what I try to do as best I can is to put the links in these liner notes so that you can catch up on some of these things. One of the things I will be putting in for this episode will be Build Back Better, buildbackbetter.com. And there are a list of priorities on that website. There are issues being addressed, or at least being laid out, the kinds of things that Joe Biden's administration wants to do. On Monday, tomorrow, Monday, November 9th, Joe Biden, will be announcing his COVID-19 pandemic task force. He will be announcing those people tomorrow. I'm looking forward to seeing who he puts on that task force. I suspect that Dr. Fauci will be part of that, although, you know, technically he's still on the White House task force, but he's not even being listened to. So, I mean, it's really kind of, you know, neither here nor there. He just is not a voice on that task force, but he is a voice of influence in the country, which I think is much more important. But I think, you know, you're going to hear from Joe Biden tomorrow. He's going to speak about COVID-19, as he has done throughout the campaign. And if you go on that buildbackbetter.com website, which is the transition website, you will see he has listed some priorities. One of them, of course, is COVID-19 and fighting it. And there's others, you know, racial justice, or as it's called, racial equity, which, you know, and that's what it's called. That's how it's termed. And I may take issue with that particular terminology. But the point is that there are a number of issues on that website that I think you should take a look at. But I guess, again, my point is, what is the strategy that you have as you celebrate this victory, which is an historic victory, historic for so many reasons. Joe Biden becoming the oldest person, not that he may like to hear this, the oldest person ever to be elected to the office of President of the United States. Joseph Biden becoming the first person to win the presidency after running at least three times for it. I don't know that anyone else has ever done that. And run for it in three different decades, you know, he ran for it in the 80s, he ran for it in the early 2000s, and he ran for it again here in the 2020s. And, you know, I think he may certainly be the first in that regard to run for the White House in three different decades. And, and this time, in this occasion, third time was a charm for him. He's also become the second person of Catholic faith to become an inhabitant or a future inhabitant of the White House after JFK in 1960, as you remember, for those of you of a certain age, and for those of you who aren't of a certain age. He's also become, I think, the first person who was already on a previous administration to run some 12 years or so later. Richard Nixon was on a prior administration, of course, with Eisenhower as the president at the top of the ticket there in the 1950s. Remember that Nixon ran straight after that in 1960 and he lost to JFK, but it was 8 years, not 12, between the time he was last running and the time he ran again. And Eisenhower's administration ended in 1961, and Richard Nixon, I think, started running for the office of president in 1967, if not early 68. So that was less than, obviously, the 12-year gap between... I should just kind of scrap that stat, because Joe Biden was in office with President Obama right up until 2017. So disregard that. Because technically, this is so interesting. And I don't know if people realize this, but this is something I just thought of. And look, I've rambled all this time. But to make this point about speaking of personalities, and, you know, it's, I spent this time telling you that no, personalities are not the thing to be galvanizing behind. Even though, look, it's a historic achievement, Kamala Harris the first woman to become vice president, the first black woman to become vice president, the first woman of color to become vice president, the first woman of, South Asian descent and Jamaican descent to become vice president, and the first politician from California to be part of a winning Democratic ticket for president. The first politician west of the Mississippi, by the way, to become part of a winning Democratic presidential ticket. But what's interesting to me is this. In 2008, Joe Biden ran for president. He ran. So they actually, you're talking about running for president. There was a 12-year gap, right, between the time that he ran in 2008 or 2007 and the time he started running in 2019, an 11, 12-year gap, whatever. Kamala Harris ran for president in 2019. As I've told you many times, I had a picture taken with her when she came here to San Francisco in that year. So she was running for president in 2019, just like Joe Biden ran for president in 2007, 2008. Joe Biden had to quit his campaign early because he really was not a factor in that 2008 run. President Obama or Barack Obama picked Joe Biden to be his vice president running mate. Kamala Harris ran for the office of president in 2019, had to drop out in 2019. And then Joe Biden picks Kamala Harris as his running mate. I just find that interesting. And I also find it interesting that Joe Biden has been part of two history-making administrations. You know, obviously as the vice president to Barack Obama, and now as the president to Kamala Harris. And I just think that there's something about that. He's being, part of this transition. And that's part of the narrative. Part of the narrative is that Joe Biden is this transformational figure. Or I should say a transitional figure. And that is what he himself has said. That he, Joe Biden, is a transitional figure. And you've got pundits saying, well, he's got to be a transformational figure. And as Bernie Sanders has said, and as many others have said, and as President Obama has said, and as even Joe Biden himself, the president-elect now, has said in the past during his campaign, no president can get this done alone. And no vice president can get this done alone. One of the first things that Kamala Harris tweeted yesterday on her Twitter page, at Kamala Harris, K-A-M-A-L-A Harris, is that this isn't about Joe and I. This is about, this is about all of us. This is about a country that needs to be healed, needs to be, we need to get this done. That was one of her first tweets yesterday after the projections had officially called this election for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So Senator Harris recognizes, Vice President-elect Harris recognizes, that this isn't about the two of them, Yes, I celebrate the personal achievements of both in this moment. It's a very important moment in the country. And I think that celebration is going to go on right through till Inauguration Day. Heck, I'll still be drinking some champagne here and there. Not every day. Not every day with the alcohol. Oh, no. But I know people who do. It's a stressful time. People use or imbibe or whatever it might be to get through some damn stressful times that we're living in. But I think the drink tastes sweeter when there are these occasions to marinate in and celebrate. And this is one of them. This is one of them right here. But I do think, though, we need to start also thinking about what the agenda is going to be for us. We have voted for Joe Biden, and the narrative in the corporate news media among some of the pundits is, well, he's got to be transformational. What is he going to do? And I get it. That's a human thing to ask. What can you expect? But if you read the website buildbackbetter.com, if you go to joebiden.com and go to the tab that says Joe's vision, he's laid out all the plans that he campaigned on And a lot of those plans are pretty darn detailed. Now, they may not have all the things or all the specificities, but they are pretty damn detailed. And they do have links, they do have this, they do have that. And our job now is to celebrate, but also to start strategizing. Because, and also hold Joe Biden and Kamala Harris accountable. You know, the loving is going on right now. And look, I know people out here in the Twitter world and beyond who may not care for either of these two individuals. And certainly the policies and some of the things they represent are not the things that I like and think are quite toxic, quite frankly. However, they are going to be taking the reins in the White House come January 20th, 2021. So in the meantime, in the 73 days, right, we have to start thinking about, okay, we may not like them, or some of us may not like these two individuals for whatever those reasons might be. What is your agenda going to be? Because as I said earlier, this can't be about personalities. And the corporate news media is all about talking about personalities. This has got to be about you and me and us and us. It's got to be about Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is not a movement geared around one particular person. You know how many black folk have been killed up in here in this country? You know how many black trans women have been killed? Come on now, it's not just about one individual. There are enough names to fill an entire calendar over and over and over again when it comes to police and state violence against black people. In this year alone, we could fill up an entire calendar year of that. Alone, 2020. So this is not about, well, this person this and this person that. This has got to be instead about what our agenda is going to be. And that is really the crucible of the point that I wish to make in this episode. Because we've got to start strategizing now. I can assure you that right now, even when some of these Trump lawyers are, you know, faintly doing their lawsuits, faux performatively, or whatever you want to call that, doing their lawsuits, and Trump's going off on Twitter, and who cares about him now? You know, he's a side note already. You know, we just have to get through these next 73 days. That's going to be the challenge. And part of that challenge is to have our agenda, because I can tell you, as long as these lawyers sit here and you got Giuliani is decrepit, evil, you want to talk about an evil person, look no further than him. And they're bloviating on state TV and on Trump TV and all of that. I can guarantee you that Mitch McConnell and these other conservative operatives and these dark money folks who pile in this dark money in these Senate races are going to be already strategizing for the two Senate races that are going to go to runoffs in Georgia. I can tell you that right now. Because this Senate now is going to be the important thing. And is the most important thing. Now that Joe Biden's been elected, we have to do an agenda and have an agenda ready for those people who haven't organized ever or who haven't thought about this in this kind of way. I think this pandemic may have given you some reason to think about this a bit more than perhaps your busy life would ordinarily allow. Lest I be presumptuous. I mean, I think that that is our opportunity now. We've had all these months, this virus is continuing to kill people at a record rate in this country. We had over, again, 100 and God knows, 28,000 cases, another record every day now. Yesterday, Saturday. While President-elect Joe Biden and President and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris were giving their speeches, the coronavirus case count went up in a single day once again, a record to 128,000 and change, and over 1,000 people dead yesterday alone while they were talking during the course of the day. And already the media is tucking that to the backside, to the back of the queue. So we've got to look at what the agenda is for us. What is your agenda? Think of the things, and I'll get into this after the break, but these are the things we've got to look at. We've got to look at the issues that we voted for Joe Biden on. Look at his transition website, buildbackbetter.com. Look at joebiden.com and look at the tab where it says Joe's vision. And just look at all those issues. Start to read up on that. Identify what your issues are even before you start looking at his. Ask yourself, what are the things you value? And whether you're in an organization or not, you should think about those things. For those of you who've been organizing for a long time and you lead these organizations, then you know what to do. But I'm really talking to people who haven't really organized, who haven't really strategized, who may not be part of a group, who may want to start their own group. And what kinds of tools you will need, and then who we can reach out to, who we can consolidate with, who we should consolidate with. And I think those answers aren't as difficult at all as you might think. I'm going to come back after the break and talk a bit more about that concretely, plus some of the issues that Joe Biden is looking at in his campaign as well. The campaign is over. In the transition, now that the transition is beginning to a Biden-Harris administration. Welcome back. And, you know, while we hear all this news here on a very windy San Francisco day on this Sunday, November 8th, while we hear all this news about, well, Donald Trump refuses to concede, keep in mind, everybody, that this is irrelevant. Whether he concedes or not is irrelevant. Now, to the extent that, yes, you want to have a transition of power that's orderly and dignified and smooth and makes it clear to not just your supporters, but to the world that this is going to be, you know, that this is the orderly transfer of power. From that perspective, yeah, it does matter on that. And it's not even symbolism. It actually is a more formalistic spectrum upon which that really matters to everybody. It's a transition. It's called that for a reason, you know. But in sum and substance, the fact that, again, I'm going to repeat this one last time. In sum and substance, the mere fact that Donald Trump is refusing to concede is immaterial to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's ascent to the White House. Immaterial. It has absolutely no bearing on it. It has absolutely no impact. What is happening right now is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are leading. They're leading right now by striking the calm tone, by striking the contrast, which is what they did throughout the campaign. They struck a contrast of wearing the masks, of physical distancing, of showing the nation and the world what responsibility looks like in terms of how you're dealing with a virus, specifically on that point. So the very behavior of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in this moment of celebration, but also over the last 8-9 months, is proof positive that there's leadership, there's a breath of fresh air. The tone is going to be different. They're setting the different tone. So the fact that Donald Trump chooses not to, and the fact that Donald Trump is going to continue to be the bullying, irascible, childish, boorish, disrespectful, and disgraceful cretin of a human being that he is it speaks for itself. It completely speaks for itself. So once you know that about Donald Trump, the guy who screamed his way through a debate and was trying not to let Joe Biden speak at all and would scream over a moderator and would cancel a debate and then complain and would then be on this shouting match with Savannah Guthrie on NBC with the back of the town halls on the same day. And, you know, this is a guy that clearly is a disgrace to humanity. And so all this corporate news media obsession with what Donald Trump does or doesn't do makes no difference to the rest of us. It honestly doesn't. We've seen what he will do or not do. We've had 4 years of it. And so now as the wind blows and howls and building windows shake and shutter and you hear all of that perhaps in the background here, because it is a windy day out here. Crisp, still warm here in San Francisco, but crisp and windy. So you will be hearing some of that probably if you haven't already. But the point I'm making is that it means nothing. Trump can have his temper tantrums and his, you know, his diaper needs changing. I don't know who's going to change that diaper because it must stink to high heaven. I mean, one of his animal wrangler handlers over there, will they change his diaper or are they going to just let him continue to do number twos to no end? Is that what's going to happen in this last 73 days of his pathetic governance? There's no governance, folks. That's his pathetic presence. Like it was, you know, last week when he sat there in that statement in the White House press briefing room and lied. And then he tweeted that, oh, he's won the election. Yeah, and this is just the rantings of a propagandistic madman projecting and gaslighting his way into the history books of infamy. That's what you're going to get. And history will not be kind to Donald Trump. In fact, it's not even that history won't be kind to Donald Trump. History will tell the truth about Donald Trump. Kindness or not kindness does not come into the equation here. And then you hear, and Jared Kushner's trying to talk to him. And, Melania's trying to talk to him. Melania Trump. Yeah, the same Melania Trump who was caught on tape talking about children from, Mexico and from other places in such disgusting ways, evil ways. That's how she looks at brown kids. The racism of it all, you know. Oh, but she's trying to talk to him and stroke his ego and guide his tiny little hands, you know. I wish the corporate news media wouldn't do this, but I know this is what they are about. It's about money. It's about single issues. It's about the personality and not about us, which is why I now want to talk a bit more about these policies that Joe Biden is putting through on his website and the transition team website, but also about what our agenda's got to be and about what we've got to do. Because for those of us who aren't activists, or for those of us who don't aren't a member of a group or team, and I'm going to talk about this in a few moments, we need to start thinking about these things. You know, I posed a question on Twitter today at the Popcorn REEL about whether or not you are celebrating or strategizing around the issues. Are you doing one or both of those things? Are you celebrating still? And look, this just happened just over, 36 hours ago or whenever it is, you know, whatever the hours are now. I mean, by the time you listen to this, it's going to be longer than 36 hours ago. But the point is that I'm recording this on Sunday, November the 8th, 2020. I have a New York Times in front of me, you know, and I only buy I have my issues with the New York Times. I only buy it when special history-making things happen because they tend to frame the moment pretty damn well. Now, they've done horribly in a lot of respects, but they have framed the moment of yesterday very well. If you look at the front page, and I have posted the front page on my Twitter account, at the Popcorn REEL. The front page of today, Sunday, November 8th, 2020's New York Times is Biden beats Trump in large, bold letters. And the subheading under that is, race is finally called after record turnout. chaotic term ends with rare incumbent loss. And then it notes further in small print underneath in script, Harris will become the country's first female vice president. So, you know, this is as you heard there from the zombies, the time of the season. And yes, it's the time of the season for loving. I mean, there's always a season for that because love never ends, right? I mean, love of, you know, of person, love of self. Hopefully you're someone who does love yourself. I mean, a lot of people have face a lot of different challenges around that. Self-love in terms of loving who you are as a human being. When I say self-love, I am not talking about that kind of self-love. I'm talking about someone out there is going to attach a meaning to something that I am not getting at. I want to make that clear. Self-love of yourself as a human being, as a person, as someone in the world. And what I am saying is that there are people in the world who struggle with that for many, many reasons and many varied reasons. And it can have a lot to do with upbringing. It can have a lot to do with an abusive situation that a person's been in or still is in. It can have a lot to do with a myriad number of things. But the season for loving is always here. The love of another, the love of self, the love of all kinds of things, right? That are positive and uplifting and life-affirming, I should add. So that's what the zombies talked about. You just heard that piece of music there. That's exactly who sang that tune. And we've now got to start loving what we've got on the table for an agenda here. Because, as I said, Joe Biden's transition team is rolling along. And for months they have been planning. From the very moment that Bernie Sanders said, I am out of here, I'm ending my campaign, or rather suspending my campaign. From that very moment, the Biden transition team already started working. There were discussions, and part of that was who the VP is going to be. But they were working in earnest right after April the 8th, 2020. That was the day that Senator Bernie Sanders gave his official concession speech. See, Bernie Sanders has the good grace to concede, right? And like I said, concession speeches, they're nice, they're good. It's a nicety, it is a courtesy, it's a tradition, but it's not a mandatory thing. Remember that Roy Moore, the pedophile, Jesus Christ, the accused pedophile, Roy Moore down in Alabama, when he ran for Senate against Doug Jones, he never conceded. He lost. It was a close loss, but he lost nonetheless. And he never, ever conceded. And he still hasn't to this day. But nobody cares. Nobody cares. Doug Jones didn't care. Doug Jones wanted to get to the business of governing. He wanted to get to that and the business of representing Alabama on the Washington, D.C. stage in the Senate. Unfortunately, Doug Jones' tenure in the Senate is going to come to an end in just 73, 74 days, which is very sad. Maybe I think it's going to come to an end in even less time than that. I'm really sad about that because Doug Jones really fought for you. And I'm disappointed that he did not show up very well. The voters did not give him another chance. And I think that that was a really key blow. Very sad, actually. But again, this is what democracy is, right? If voters choose someone else and that vote has proven to be what it is and it's not obscured by or procured by some illegitimate means, then that's what happens, right? That's what democracy is supposed to be, democracy in quotes. But what I am trying to get at here, for those of you listening, is that the Biden transition team began working pretty much right away after April the 8th of this year, when Bernie Sanders said, I am conceding, meaning that the only person left in the Democratic race was Joe Biden, which meant that he was the presumptive Democratic nominee. Now, the reason why the word presumptive was being used at the time was because A, he was the last person left in the Democratic field, and B, the status of the official nominee does not get made official until, and the goal of officiating or officializing the presumptive nominee to the Democratic nominee does not become a reality until the convention. So Joe Biden still had to wait 4 months in order to, 4.5 months in order to officially become the Democratic presidential nominee. So that was really what happened, and you've got to keep that in mind. But I can tell you that throughout the time after Bernie Sanders conceded on April the 8th, and then the following Monday, I think the 13th or whatever that was, that date, the first day of the next week, or at least Monday of the next week, Bernie Sanders joined Joe Biden in an exclusive video message, and he joined him and said he endorsed him. And there were a load of people, of course, on the progressive side who were not happy with this. How could you do that so quickly? Couldn't you do this? Couldn't you do that? Why did you drop out, Bernie? Couldn't you stay in at least through the primaries? Even though Bernie said in his concession speech that he was going to stay on the ballot. Now, the New York Democratic Party, which is a real doozy of a party, they are basically Republicans in Democratic clothing, took him off the ballot initially. And then, you know, there were appeals and the judge said, no, you can't take Bernie off the ballot. And then they tried to get rid of the election and say, oh, the pandemic is the reason why. And but you can still go vote in these other races, not the Democratic primary between Biden and Senate and Sanders. You can still vote in these races, but not in the Democratic primary. And the judge said, no, we're not having that. I'm not having that here. And then the New York Democratic Party, whomever it was, the IDNC or whatever they are, a really toxic group of people who say they're Democrats, corporatists, and they were forced to reinstate him, to reinstate the Democratic primary between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. So that took place. Joe Biden won it fairly darn handily and won it going away, actually. But all of that brings me to, once the nomination was complete at the convention in August for the Democrats, it was time for the Biden transition team to work in overdrive. And they had put together a list of priorities, and here they are. I'm reading them off the Build Back Better. The Build Back. I'm speaking too quickly. The Build Back Better? No, I. What? No, the Build Back Better website at buildbackbetter.com. I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, I can't imagine that would have been used as a campaign slogan. Could you imagine? Build back wetter. Oh, let me stop now. No. This is. I can't go there. I can't, and I won't. That's enough. That's as far as it gets. Let's get back on track here. I'm sorry. On the build back. You know what I'm gonna do. You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to say on the Biden-Harris transition website. That's actually easier for me to say because, oh, dearie me. So anyway, look, on the Biden-Harris transition website, there is a tab on the menu that says priorities on it. And you click on priorities and it says, we aren't just going to rebuild what has worked in the past. This is our opportunity to build back better than ever. Now, that's the key thing here. And the listings are COVID-19, economic recovery, racial equity, climate change. Those are the four things that are listed there in the priorities. And you click on each of them and they go into some detail on some of the things that they are talking about. There's a drive-through testing, next generation testing, and investing in that, in home kits. I am not doing well with words today. I am not. So maybe I should probably speak a little bit less. Oh, dearie me. And tell you that you should go to the website, which I will link to in the liner notes of this episode. How about that? I think because I am not getting the words right, and they are coming out in ways that I do not want them to. So I can tell you that if you click on the links for each of those issues, there are some things to contemplate, to read over, to consider. Economic recovery, racial equity. I don't know about racial equity. Equity versus equality. Those are two different things. And maybe I should get into that, not today, but another day. Because that's another thing, and how those things, please, my whole point is, please read these if you can. I really would like you to, because it's a taste of what you can look at here, and what you might expect. And then what I'd like you to do for your homework of sorts, and I know Randy Rhodes loves homework, and I think it's a good thing. She talks about it on her show a lot, by the way. I think a good thing is to not just look at the priorities, but also look at what your priorities are, right? What are the issues that you think are the most important? You may disagree with all the issues I just read out. You may not think that those are important things. I happen to think that they are important things. That's just myself, yours truly. You may think that something else is more important. But I tell you what is also important, in addition to those issues and the issues that you may be thinking of, the Supreme Court is now important. And the Supreme Court, with Amy Coney Barrett on it now as Justice Barrett, is hugely important now. We've got two big things that are very important right now. These two Senate races in Georgia that are going to be going to runoffs, which is the Ossoff race with the Republican David Perdue and Stephen. See what I mean? My words are not right today. Reverend Raphael Warnock and Senator Kelly Loeffler, the Republican senator, they're both of these races in Georgia are going to runoffs. So look, it's really important that we have agendas. What is our agenda going to be? What is your agenda going to be? What is your personal agenda going to be? Think of the issues that matter the most to you, right? If you still got some champagne around in the house, if you still got a beer, if you still got wine, if you still got water, whatever it is you drink, chamomile tea, green tea, Earl Grey, whatever it is you drink, drink some more of it and ponder an agenda for a few minutes. What is it that means the most to you? Which issues mean the most to you personally? Is it gun violence? Is it, dealing with ending gun violence, dealing with ending toxic masculinity / domestic violence, because those things are one and the same. You know, domestic violence is perpetrated by and large by men. And, you know, this toxic masculinity, this violence in a society that perpetuates it, that anchors it, that authors it, that's systemic, you know, is that part of the issue that's important for you? What issues do you have on your plate, or things that you think about or that you are affected by that you think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris need to address? Because now is the time to start lobbying them both. You know, the transition team certainly is doing what it's doing, and you should certainly applaud that, because I think some of the things that they got on there are good. I like the idea that Joe Biden tomorrow is going to name a 12-member coronavirus task force. I like that. It means that these folks are going to get to work. I'm looking forward to seeing who he names, because that will tell me maybe a little bit of something about how he's governing, at least with that. And then it's going to be a few days or weeks before he starts to name cabinet members. I expect that to happen either just before the Thanksgiving holiday, if you, is a so-called Thanksgiving holiday, or just after it. You know, usually that's done in the same month that the election is officially that the person becomes president-elect, and you can expect that, and it will happen from time to time. He'll hold press conferences, and he'll have one or two people with him that he will name at a time, and he'll have another press conference. He'll name another person. And, you know, there's going to be transparency. We've got to demand that. I don't expect anything less. I don't think there's going to be any lack of transparency, unlike what we're dealing with now. You know, not knowing when this guy got tested before he came down with the coronavirus, Donald Trump, you know, all that. We're not going to have that problem with the Joe Biden administration. I guarantee you. But my whole point is, now is the time for you to outline your agenda. It really is. And again, I'm speaking particularly to people who have not or have not joined an activist group of any kind, or who have never done this before, have never thought about the issues in this kind of structural way. This is the time to do it. Now, you may not have a lot of time to do it. You've got other responsibilities, and all those things are much more important and more immediate for you, of course. But I do think that this is the thing that is what we must be thinking about now. You know, healthcare, you know, I don't see that on the transition list, by the way. You know, on the priorities list, I mean, COVID-19 obviously engenders healthcare, but there isn't, on this priorities list, there isn't anything about healthcare. So, you know, again, Joe Biden was not for Medicare for All. Keep that in mind. You may be for Medicare for All. If you're listening to this, you may well be, as I am, a supporter of Medicare for All, which means that it's government-run, government-paid, taxpayer-based healthcare for everybody. So what will happen is that the average person, at least Bernie Sanders' plan did this, would pay a little bit more tax. Not that much more tax, but a little bit more under a Medicare for All system in order for everybody to get the full benefits of the protections of that system. And it would still save billions of dollars a year. This is the thing that Bernie Sanders campaigned on very strongly during his run this time around. And it was something that when it was just Biden and Bernie, though, Biden furiously opposed it. He was not for it. He is for expanding Obamacare and allowing for a public option. The corporations that run the healthcare management system now, you know, still will get a seat at the table, still will be able to make money off of you. And a public option is designed, you know, as a somewhat of an offset, but you still are going to have the corporations at the table running health management companies. And what Medicare for All does is get rid of those corporate companies. And we know that Joe Biden is from Delaware now, originally from Pennsylvania, but, you know, his home now is Delaware. He's made it his home for a long time. He would Amtrak from D.C. to Delaware. He's not going to be doing that over these next 4 years, obviously, at least 4 years, because, of course, he's going to be living in the White House. He is not going to be Amtraking anywhere from January 20th, 2021. Onwards for at least 4, if not 8 years. So he's going to be in Washington. And Delaware, as you know, is the seat of corporate power. You know, it's the home to credit card company headquarters. I mean, it's a haven. It's a haven for big money and for these corporates. And Joe Biden lives in the heart of that. So you've got to look at all of these things. When you look at an agenda, you've got to look at the things that are fit what you need and what you think that the country needs, and not only that, not just for yourself, although it's important that you do articulate something for yourself, about the nation. It's about kids. It's about family. It's about the future of the country, what the country's going to look like. That's what this election was a referendum on. It wasn't just a referendum on Donald Trump, although it definitely was part of it. It was a referendum on what is your vision for the future? What should the country look like? How should it be governing? And who should be governing it? So yes, Trump was involved in that, obviously. But the people, thank goodness, said, we want a change. We are not happy with the way Donald Trump has behaved. We are not happy with the way government has behaved under Donald Trump. We're not happy with all this nonsense, all these lies about the virus. We're not happy with 240,000 people dead from coronavirus and Donald Trump lying and killing them. We're not happy. We don't want that. Now, there were 71 million people who said, we are quite happy with Donald Trump murdering 240,000 people. We are quite happy with Donald Trump throwing paper towels at people in Puerto Rico, at Americans in Puerto Rico. We are quite happy with Donald Trump lying to us every day. We love the 25,000 times that he's lied to us. We love it. And that's what these pundits say. Oh, well, you better listen to the 49% or 47, I guess it is, 47% of people who voted for Donald Trump. But you better listen to them. Yes, we know Joe Biden has said he will be president of everybody, which is a unifying message. But hold on a second. There is an agenda that he has planned to carry out. And a lot of that agenda, at least so far in the early offing, reflects some of the things that a lot of us have been looking for. Sunrise Movement on climate change, they jumped on board. They're a progressive group that Bernie endorsed and that endorsed Bernie, I should say. And they endorsed Biden during the transition period after Bernie dropped out. And, you know, look, we'll see what happens. But we have got to start putting together our own agenda and also look at these two Georgia Senate races, because the seat of power will rest on who wins those races in Georgia. It's going to come down to that January runoff in both cases. That's critical. Critical. And then not to mention that, you've also got the Supreme Court, as I mentioned. So what your issues are have got to be the focus. I mean, this is what Bernie's campaign and Joe Biden's campaign were sending people via email. What issues should they talk about in their debate? And there's about 25 issues. Affordable Care Act, COVID-19, criminal justice reform, racial justice, economic justice, social justice, this, that, the other. A woman's right to choose, Supreme Court, a million things, a long list. You've got to figure out what your list is. Make it five things, right? Have a platform. Pretend that you're running for office, right? Pretend that you are Kamala Harris, right? Not policy-wise necessarily for some of you, but pretend that you are in her shoes and you are running for something. And you, whatever your name is who's listening, right? Whoever you are, put down your name and put the word plan next to it. And then itemize five issues that mean the most to you. And then start to develop something about your feelings and thoughts about those issues. Write them down in a diary. Write them down on your laptop. Write them down on your iPad. Whatever it is. Make it three or four sentences for each thing. Present that in a policy paper. And whatever your first and last name are, put it in. And type in your first and last name plus the word policy paper or plan. Bullet point that sucker, you know. Send it, and I'm telling you, start rehearsing. Read that plan out aloud to yourself. Record yourself reading that plan out. Put it on YouTube if you want to. Or whatever you use for social media. Get into that mode. Remember a few weeks ago, a few months ago even, I was talking here on this podcast about getting yourself into a voting mindset. Well, you've done that. You've voted. Thank you very much. You're celebrating. I'm glad people all over the country and around the world are celebrating. Now we've got to start transitioning to getting ourselves into a mindset of strategizing, into a mindset of agenda planning, agenda formation. That has got to be the goal now in these next 73 days, so that by the time we celebrate the inauguration of Biden and Harris, we have an agenda plan ready. This is for the people I'm speaking to who have not ever been involved in any kind of organization, any kind of thing. If you're not comfortable with putting together a plan and an agenda yourself personally, in your own life, and it's really easy, right? Name five issues for yourself. Name five issues that are really important to you, deeply important to you on a personal level, and then articulate that. But if you don't want to do that, or if you think that's too much, or whatever it might be, you're too busy, Align yourself with organizations that represent the interests that you want to see not only represented, but acted upon and enacted into law. Whether that's color of change, whether that's every, you know, mums demand action, every town, you know, mums demand action, the gun safety group, gun sense group, whether it's the NAA, you know, NAACP, whether it's, I mean, I can go on and on with it. Voto Latino, Indivisible, you know, the other group there that I'm trying to think of that's headed by Erica Andiola, dealing with immigration and the Dreamers, whatever the issue is for you or issues, join an organization. If you don't want to put together an agenda, and I think you should put together one for yourself, okay, here are the four or five issues or the two issues or the three issues that I think I want to see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris not only address but act upon. And then send that plan out to your congressperson, to your whomever. And even before you do that, get like-minded people, your friends, family, whomever, like-minded people on your Twitter channel, your YouTube network channel, or your Instagram, your Facebook, and join a group and form a group amongst you around an agenda, the commonality of issues on the agenda spectrum, and coalesce around that. And there you've got an organization for yourself in 2.2 seconds, literally. Okay, 2.2 seconds, that's a little quick. Oh, dearie me. I've got to get away from talking about, because everything gets misinterpreted. What I'm trying to say here is that organizations can be formed pretty darn quickly. And with social media and on the internet, they can be formed very quick. If you can have these violent, racist, terroristic white groups forming and organizing on Facebook and then actually storming and invading the state capital of Michigan and threatening to kill the governor of Michigan, if you can have that garbage and that evil on Facebook and anywhere else, you can put together an organization that is life-affirming. You can put together an organization online with fellow like-minded people that is founded upon and built upon the principles of life affirmation, issues that are life-affirming, like a woman's right to choose, like police reform, like governmental reform, like criminal justice reform, all these things, right? And this is how you build movements. This is how you build organizations. And then you organize and you get together, you meet, you strategize, you then build something. So you've got a group of people around you that fortifies your position because they also have the same or similarly held positions and beliefs around the issues. You meet virtually. You've got Zoom. You've got this. You've got that. It's a great opportunity for people now to strategize. And it can be done all over the country in a Zoom meeting, in a WebEx meeting, in a Skype meeting, in a whatever. It can be done. And I'm telling you, that's how you build movements. That's how you build agendas. That's how you build something, not for a moment, but for a real movement. One of the things that we did not do, and I've said it before, is that when President Obama became President Obama, we backed off. Most organizations did. And maybe every now and again they'd call them out, but most times they would just sit back. And we should never, ever do that again with any administration. I don't care which party it belongs to. But particularly now, when we are about to have an administration that is at least going to listen to us. When Joe Biden said yesterday that I will have your back, black community, because you've always had mine, let's hold him to that. Let us in the black community, we must hold him to it and present the things that we presented in these here streets throughout the last few months. Black Lives Matter movement, all these things. Dealing with the police. You've got to remember something about Joe Biden. Joe Biden is the kind of politician, a throwback. He believes in, well, every politician should believe in this. And I'm not saying that there aren't any on the Democratic side who do, because many do. There are Republicans who don't. Although not every Republican, but many Republicans don't these days. But Joe Biden belongs to the old school of, I'm going to meet with, you know, Eastland, you know, these racists and these segregationists. That's what the white male politician of yesteryear does and still does in some cases. And I'll meet with anybody, including them, you know, to forge some kind of agenda or some kind of thing. We've got to come out with our agenda. And there are different parts of the Democratic Party base. And AOC, the congresswoman who just got reelected last week, put this out on blast in the New York Times interview. And she talked about the truth of the Democratic Party. It still has, and I've said this before, major contempt for a lot of its voters. And the AOC had reached out many, many times. And only 4 or 5 people were receptive to her asking to work within the Democratic Party for Biden, or in terms of, or to push this agenda. We saw how AOC was treated. Look, again, I don't want to make this about personalities, but I'm just talking about a theme of contempt. We saw how AOC was treated at the RNC, at the DNC. I told you my words are not right today. We saw how she was sidelined there, and it was only Bernie Sanders who invited her to speak at the DNC, not anybody within the DNC itself, or Joe Biden in particular. So there's a lot of fractures. We see this with Bernie's, the progressives for Bernie and all of that. And look, I'm a progressive. But look, as tough as it was to see that Bernie ended his campaign that started so well, I eventually transitioned over to realizing that Joe Biden was going to be the nominee. And I had said even before he became that I would support whomever the nominee was on the Democratic side, and that I would do work for them, and I would emphasize the importance of voting for them. And I've kept my word. I'm going to continue to do that. And I'm going to push Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I hope you do too, whether you are fans of theirs or not. I hope that you present agendas. I hope that you join organizations if you already have not done so. Or start your own. You know? And let's start getting to work. Because yes, we've got to see what Joe Biden does. But we also have to present him our agenda, so that he's aware of, okay, this is what they want. What can we do? How far can I go? And you've got to keep pushing him. In fact, I think it was President Obama in a recent campaign commercial who said that Joe and Kamala know that you're going to be pushing him. So, I mean, they're there to be pushed. This is why we had to get him elected, because the other guy would not listen. And I told you, he doesn't even listen to his closest advisors. Case in point, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, his wife, his spouse, Melania Trump, I just told you about this earlier. They've been trying, through the corporate news media has reported this, they've been trying to get him to concede. And he's not listening to them. If you can't listen to your own spouse or your own son-in-law, who the hell are you going to listen to? I guess I know the answer to that. It's two words, begins with an F. And then the second word, it begins with an N. You can figure that out. But, I mean, this is the thing, right? So, Joe and Kamala are going to listen, which means you've got to have something for them to listen to. You've got to push them. And I don't mean physically. I mean push them to, in terms of politics and everything else, with your agenda. This is the 21st century now. And Joe Biden's got to come to terms with this, and he knows that he is a transitional, as he said, transitional candidate. He's the guy, the person who is going to be passing off the baton to Senator Kamala Harris, Vice President-elect Harris, should he decide not to run after the first term. And we have to be pushing both of them, so that by the time, if that ever happens, that Biden says, you know, I'm only going to run for one term, I'm not going to run for a second term, whatever it might be, or something happens, God forbid, whatever, you know, we have to be ready. Because the Republicans, I guarantee you, the Republicans are already strategizing for 2024. The orange menace in the corner over there sulking, they don't give a rat's ass about him. They've already moved away from him. Mitt Romney and them, they've already started to move away. The more moderate wing, they've started to move away. The others are silent. You have some of the radicals who, of course, the radicals on the right who are now, you know, still trying to back this garbage because they got their re-election, Lindsey Graham. they're going to still scream for Trump and shout for him. And, you know, they're going to sycophant themselves into his good graces or not. He doesn't even care about them. But the point I'm making is very simple. This is now a time for us to present our agenda. And that's what we have to do. We have to be alert, articulately sharp in our agenda, how we present it. And please follow those instructions, please, that I laid out. Get yourself 15 minutes. Think about the issues that really affect you the most. Name them, top three or five of them. Put them down on paper. Write two or three sentences about each one, how it's affected you, and what you would like to see done. And then read this transition priority issues on the transition website, which I will provide a link to. And then get involved, get active, share your what kind of issues you care about with your friends on Facebook or wherever. Get a group together, meet, talk. This is the time right now. Have a meeting around this. Join an organization or be an organization. Head your own. Form an organization amongst the people that you meet with on Zoom. On you, whatever. This is how it gets done. You've got so many organizations out here. Or join one. If you don't want to form one of your own, join one. Or think about running for office on whichever level you might. It doesn't have to be the top level. It could be dog catcher. It could be school board. It could be whatever. I bumped into the school board person who was running here in San Francisco the other day. I wanted to, and I had previously put out an invitation to her. Unfortunately, she never did get back to me. But I happened to bump into her at San Francisco City Hall, outside the voting center there on the street, outside the outdoor voting center. And I talked to her for a few minutes. I don't know if she won. I haven't checked the local races here in San Francisco, and I'll find out. But I spoke to her. But you have an opportunity to run for these things, just like she has, just like anyone else. And do not be intimidated. Yes, money is needed, but don't be afraid. If you think that your issues aren't being represented, get yourself a coalition together. Get yourself people together who have a common purpose like you do, agree on the issues mostly, and form an organization and start to get a seat at the table. Use a podcast. Use your voice. Start a podcast like I have. Start a podcast of rallying people around issues that you care about. And then do your podcast broadcast. Do your podcasting, right? And then put those issues out there. And then, start to talk about the issues that mean things and present that. This is how it gets done. It's not as difficult as some people may lead you to believe. And once that gets done, the sky's the limit. It truly is. The sky's the limit. So we need to have this agenda and we need to start doing this as we celebrate. Because A, Donald Trump is still in the White House. B, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are not. And C, in these intervening 73 days, we have to have an agenda in our own personal lives in terms of what issues we are going to advocate for during these next 4 years. And also in these remaining 73. That does not take a vacation, though. We have to keep doing this because the Democratic Party does have a certain level of contempt for its voters. The Republican Party does as well, because what they do is they lie to their voters and they scare their voters and they appeal to the racism in their voters. So they have contempt for them in that way. The Democratic Party has contempt for its voters because, it often disregards the progressives in that party. As we know from 2016 with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and what she did with Bernie Sanders and everything else. Right? As reported by Donna Brazile in her book, Hacks, H-A-C-K-S. We've seen the contempt. We've seen all of that. Right? The voters get short shrifted and, the Democrats take black voters for granted. I think they worked a little bit harder this time to get black and Latinx turned out, but I think they can always work harder. So anyway, look, I've dealt with this issue and there's more to talk about on this. So while it is over in terms of Donald Trump's reign, is going to be officially over in at least in 73 days, it's only just beginning for us. It really is only just beginning for us as we start to strategize now, as we come up towards a Biden-Harris administration. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.